Hello and welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Valerie Smaldone with Leslie Gold. With the stunning Triple Crown victory of American Pharoah last weekend, horse racing is very hot news. The excitement generated from this race in New York was enormous, and people are talking about the wondrous performance of the winning horse. But there is a dark side to horse racing that is rarely discussed. There are now 965 total documented horses from 2014 who have died, and 23 more just over the last weekend. So this is a stunning figure, stunning statistics to discuss today on America Weekend. Patrick Batuello, the founder of Horse Racing Wrongs, is my guest today. Thanks and welcome to America Weekend, Patrick.
Thank you for having me, Valerie.
You know, before we talk about the stunning statistics that I mentioned, tell me why you started the advocacy group Horse Racing Wrongs.
I come to it from an animal rights perspective. I have been writing on animal issues for several years. I had a blog in the Albany region, major newspaper, the Times Union. And back in 2010 or 11, I was researching for an article on horse racing and found a dearth of information out there. You know, there were certainly the New York Times number of 24 dead a week was bandied about, but there was no one doing what I'm currently doing, and that is, you know, tracking, if you will, the industry on a daily basis and trying to accumulate this list that I have for 2014. So it's really to fill a gap in the within the animal rights community, so to speak. No one was talking about the breakdown. Slaughter has become a more prevalent issue in recent years. But as far as the daily dying that's going on in American tracks, no one was covering that.
So what is it that we don't see? We see a beautiful day. We see people out having a great time. You know, in Kentucky, they're all dressed up. In New York, not so much, but throngs of people to be there for this very short race. What don't we see? What's going on behind the scenes that we need to know about?
Sure. Well, you know, I live in the capital region in New York, and we're in Saratoga country. So we hear that, that talked about all the time, how these horses are pampered. They're treated better than you and I. And what people need to keep in mind is that Saratoga, Santa Anita out in California, Churchill Downs in Kentucky, those are the elite tracks, and you're really seeing the top tier of horses. But the bulk of American horse racing is what's referred to as the claiming game, where horses are put up for sale. You know, every horse that's entered into a race is put up for sale prior to the race. And anyone, you know, any licensed trainer or owner can put a claim in on that horse, and basically they're buying that horse, so ownership changes hands at the end of the race. That makes up around 70% of American racing. That's where most of the breakdowns occur. And what I'm trying to convey to the public is that this is happening every single day. You know, at least three horses a day are dying. You know, that's the New York Times statistic is 28 dead per week. I have found that it's more than that. I began foiling each of the 30-odd racing states in the country at the beginning of this year, and I've accumulated that list that you referred to at the top of the show. I don't know if you wanted to get into that now, but that number of 965, when you consider some of the factors that aren't included in that number, I believe that it can easily and reasonably be doubled, leaving us with roughly 2,000 horses that are being killed on American racetracks every year.
And this is because of a number of reasons, as I understand it. One is just injury from stumbling, bumping into each other. They're huge animals. They're enormous. So there's a lot of mass there. They fall, they stumble. But there are other reasons too, Patrick. Isn't that correct?
There are. Certainly, the drugs are a big part of the story. I choose not to focus on that as much because there are groups within the industry that are trying to eliminate race day medication, for example. There are pre-existing conditions that would make a horse more susceptible to a fatal breakdown that if they were given better pre-race exams, you know, by the state vets, we could possibly, you know, reduce the number of deaths. You know, but my argument, and if you go to my site, you'll see I have the inevitability of dead racehorses, is that the killing is practically inherent to the system. These horses are being raced before reaching full physical maturity. A typical horse does not mature until the age of 6, roughly, and the higher up the horse's body, the slower the process, so the bones and the spine, of all places, are the last to fully finish. A typical racehorse is thrust into training at 18 months and raced at 2, and on the maturation chart, a 2-year-old horse is roughly the equivalent of a kindergartner. Just to give you an idea of, you know, what type of a body we're dealing with here. Also, they're being bred for speed. It's raw speed. So, you know, we're talking about a 1,000 to 1,200-pound animal that's running on legs that won't support them, typically won't support them, for a full lifetime of a horse, which would be roughly 30 years. You know, it's all about what the horse can do for the humans that are involved during that window where they're earning. Again, my argument is this. You can certainly reduce some of these breakdowns by tighter drug control, better track surfaces, better pre-race exams, but they will never be able to eliminate horses dying on the racetrack.
What would you like to see happen with this advocacy group?
I don't believe there's any justification for horse racing in the 21st century. At its core, horse racing is a gambling business. And 50 years ago, gambling on horse and dog races were the only legal way you could gamble in this country. No such excuse exists today. So I'm not here against gambling in and of itself, although I'm not a gambler. I don't have anything to say about gambling. What I am saying is don't gamble at the expense of sentient beings, you know, horses and dogs, when there are casinos, you know, full-service casinos that are proliferating around the country, state lottery games. There's no excuse to be doing this in the 21st century. So the killing, the carnage, really, is what it is. Can't be justified, can't be morally justified any longer.
You mentioned the bulk of the horse racing in the country, the 70%, and I'm thinking about horse owners and what happens if they lose a horse, because I assume they have heavy insurance policies on the horse and they're not really losing money at the end of it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's actually, it's not entirely true. Certainly, you know, the American Pharaohs are insured, you know, but again, those are the mm-hmm. tiny minority,
right.
You know, those elite horses. Those claiming races that I talked about, most of those horses are not insured. So just to give you an example, say a horse was racing in a $5,000 claiming race at Aqueduct. That means that horse is for sale for $5,000. That's what the horse is worth at that point. Another part of the story, and this kind of goes to your question, much of horse racing in the United States is being subsidized by racino gaming. In New York, for example, we have 11 racetracks, 7 harness and 4 thoroughbred. If not for those racinos, which is the video lottery terminals or slot machines mm-hmm. that you see at the racetracks, every harness track in this state, all 7 of them, would have closed shop by now. And then again, that's not my opinion. That's the, you know, that's the assessment from people inside the industry. That's why they desperately lobbied the state legislature to get this racino gaming at the tracks. And how it works is a track owner petitions for a license, you know, to bring in these video lottery terminals. And as part of that agreement, they send some of the revenue to the horse people through larger purses and to breeding incentives. So the industry is being propped up, a large part of the industry, I should say, is being propped up by corporate welfare. There's no other way to describe it. The bottom line is much of horse racing in the U.S. can't compete with casinos and state lotteries any longer. Where they had a monopoly at one point, they don't anymore. And racing understands that they are not recruiting the younger people into this game. The 20-something crowd, you know, are happier to go to a casino
right.
and play blackjack. So they're in trouble, and if not for this subsidy, much of racing would have collapsed by now, not just the harness tracks, but also some mm-hmm. of the, you know, like Finger Lakes and Aqueduct, certainly would be dead or dying by now if not for these subsidies. Getting back to your question about these claiming races, there's every incentive for these trainers and owners to keep running these cheaper horses because these purses have been jacked up by the racino money. These horses aren't worth a whole lot relative, you know, $4,000, mm-hmm. $5,000. Typically, these races pay first through last, which is, again, different from what it used to be. It used to be first, second, third, maybe fourth. Now they're paying 1 through 9. So a horse could finish 30 lengths behind in last place and still make $100 for his owner mm-hmm. and his trainer. So the system is just diseased from the bottom up, and again, if not for these subsidies, we would have seen much of American horse racing implode.
fascinating and interesting information that people do not know about, Patrick, and really sad, too. And I have to say, on a personal note, I cannot watch the races. I always felt there was just too much risk. I didn't know all of this other information you provided, but it felt wrong for me. That's my personal opinion. They are such beautiful animals. And I appreciate your advocacy of the horses, and the organization is Horse Racing Wrongs, which you can find online and also on Facebook. Patrick Batuello, thank you for joining me on America Weekend.
Thank you again for having me, Valerie.
It's Valerie Smaldone and Leslie Gold on the Envision Radio Network.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. How about an easy way to teach your children about commitment? Easy to talk about, hard to learn, better taught through an action technique. Here's the social science of it. Recently, I was on a car trip with several others, and about halfway through, my good friend asked, do you mind if my son drives? He was a student driver, close to his license, thought he'd be okay, so he took over. The son signaled a left turn, but he changed his mind. The father immediately said, what have I taught you about commitment? The son said, a signal to make a turn is like any other commitment. When you commit, do it.
Do it. Do it.
What's the cheap psychological trick? Even small situations can be used to teach higher ethical standards. You can check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 888-359-MY-TV.
Think green. Harrison with you. Discovery is highlighting the Rodale Institute's research showing organic agriculture can actually remove 7,000 pounds of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere per acre every year. CO2 heating up the atmosphere is the culprit behind the larger problem of global warming. Organic farming uses less water to help crops grow because organic crops don't contain genetically modified genes, which require more water and food to grow. In fact, organic crops are in many ways drought resistant. The reason is chemical fertilizer is like a water sponge, in that plants drink it up every time they're thirsty for water. As long as water is plentiful, they grow just fine, but as soon as water gets scarce, the salt in the chemically fed plants no longer is diluted, reaching toxic concentrations, and the plant stops growing. Tomorrow, weeds and healthier vegetables. From the Greeniverse.
Think green with Harrison at GoHarrison.com.